It's time for Hoag Health Radio. Here's your host, Deborah Howell.
Greetings to you and welcome to our show. So glad you could join us today. On our show today, our guest is Dr. Louis Vandermolen. He's with the Hoag Cancer Center and the Orange Coast Oncology Hematology Medical Association, where his specialties are breast cancer and lung cancer. Whew, that is an impressive resume. We are glad to grab you for a few minutes today. Welcome, Dr. Vandermolen.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
We're here today to give our listeners sort of an overview of breast cancer in this segment, so I'll begin with this question. How common is breast cancer?
Probably one of the most common cancers in women, although it's close tie to lung cancer, and on the average of about 150,000 cases a year in the U.S.
Mm-hmm. Is it becoming more common for men?
It is. It seems to be about 3 to 4% of all breast cancer is male breast cancer. It does look like that may be increasing in the last few years.
All right. I think in this segment we'll focus on women. So what kinds of women are at risk for breast cancer?
Seems to be tied to diet, high-fat diet, animal fat diet, and also seems to be an increased incidence of breast cancer in women who are overweight. So it's weight-related, obesity-related, diet-related.
Okay. Now, when you say animal fat, there's been a lot of talk lately about four-legged animals versus two-legged animals.
Yeah, it's predominantly animal fat, predominantly red meat, so I'd say four-legged animals. There's been more data as well, though, with the association between obesity and breast cancer, not only as far as the incidence or development of breast cancer, but also as far as recurrence.
Okay. All right. So I have so many questions, but I'm wondering why fat from an animal might be worse for you than fat from a donut.
Yeah, well, the thinking is that animal fat probably contains hormones.
Okay.
So increased hormones, either androgens, male hormone or female hormone, and that might lead to the genesis of breast cancer.
Got it. Okay. Thanks for clearing that up. I've always wondered that. Now, who should get mammograms and how often?
Well, that's a controversial area, but in general, women should begin to get mammograms by the age of 40. Some women at high risk may be 35.
Mm-hmm.
And in high-risk women, it should be at least annually or yearly. But more recent studies have suggested women that are at low risk might be able to get mammograms every 2 years. But I think the consensus opinion is it should be done on an annual basis.
Okay, very good. Are there different types of breast cancer?
All cancers begin from one cell. One cell becomes cancer, divides and forms two and then four. The most common source of breast cancer is the cells that line the duct, the milk duct. That would be called a ductal cancer.
Mm-hmm.
The next most common comes from the lobular, the funnel, the end of the duct. That's a lobular cancer. And by far away, that's 99% of all breast cancers.
Okay. All right. What is hereditary breast cancer?
Hereditary cancer or hereditary breast cancer is breast cancer that develops in someone who has a genetic predisposition for developing cancer. That's someone who's born with an abnormal gene. There are two genes that have been identified that are associated with developing breast cancer called BRCA1 and BRCA2. Mm-hmm. About 10% of women with breast cancer will have genetic breast cancer.
10%, okay. And is there a way of following these genes?
They can be identified through blood testing. So if you're a carrier for the gene, you can be identified by having blood testing done.
But after you're identified with it, is there a way to chart any progress? I mean, progression is what I'm looking for?
No, there's no way to do that. But what we know is that if you're a carrier, if you have the gene, in general, your risk of developing breast cancer in your lifetime could be as high as 70%. And also, if you're a carrier for the gene, your risk of developing ovarian cancer, cancer of the ovary, could be as high as 30 to 35%. So clearly, your risk for developing both breast and ovarian cancer, and that would necessitate close monitoring and screening, but there's no other way to progress.
So you just get more tests and more screening and just follow it that way. Okay, let's talk about the stages of breast cancer and what they mean.
So staging is determined by the size of the cancer itself, how big the cancer is in the breast itself, and by whether or not there's spread, first of all, to lymph glands, or they're spread secondly to other areas of the body.
Mm-hmm.
There are four stages, but the first stage is actually stage zero. And stage zero would be a cancer that's confined to the duct, one that doesn't invade across the so-called basement membrane. So that's a very, very early breast cancer, stage zero. It's PSI 2. Stage one would be a breast cancer that's smaller than 2 centimeters and has not spread to lymph glands. Stage two would be a cancer that spread to lymph glands. And then finally, stage three would be a larger cancer in the breast, larger than 6 centimeters. And stage four would be a cancer that spread someplace else to another organ, like bone or liver or lung, someplace else.
Okay. Thank you so much. So once we're at the point where a woman needs to decide between mastectomy or lumpectomy, what kinds of advice do you give her? What kinds of information should she be looking at?
Well, both of those options are local treatments. So the benefits, the goals of lumpectomy or mastectomy are to eradicate all the obvious cancer in the breast, the macroscopic disease, and also to eradicate any microscopic cancer cells in the breast. If somebody has cancer and it comes back again at a later date, it doesn't come out of nowhere. That means that there necessarily had to be microscopic cells remaining that grew to the point of becoming detectable. Mm-hmm. So if you can eradicate those microscopic cells, you can prevent reoccurrence. That's the goals of both of those treatments. And you really just need to balance the potential benefits against the potential harms from a survival standpoint, from a cure standpoint. They're equivalent. Mm-hmm.
Sure. And every woman is different, too.
Some women choose to have mastectomy and reconstruction. I think as the plastic surgeons have gotten better at reconstruction, more and more women are opting to have mastectomy reconstruction because they want to avoid radiation. On the other hand, women want to preserve the breast for the psychological, emotional, and physical benefits of breast preservation.
Sure. Okay. So how does a woman decide about chemotherapy after surgery?
It's determined on what's considered the risk of microscopic disease elsewhere. What's the chance that there's tiny microscopic cancer cells somewhere else in the body? Because the goal of chemotherapy is to kill or eradicate those microscopic cells to prevent recurrence elsewhere, someplace outside of the breast. And it's determined a number of ways. It's determined by analyzing the tumor, determined by how big the cancer is. The bigger it is, the more likely it's spread. Mm-hmm. Whether it's spread to lymph glands, whether or not there are estrogen receptors on the surface of the cells. And then there's another test that's done, another more complicated test, where they look at a genetic profile of the cancer itself. That test is called Oncotype DX. Mm-hmm. What they do is look at 16 different genes that are expressed within the cancer cells, and that helps determine, that genetic expression helps determine whether or not there would be any role or benefit for chemotherapy.
Incredible tools we now have at our disposal. Wow, such a different day. So why do some women get chemotherapy before surgery?
Generally, that's done because the woman has a desire to preserve the breast, but isn't really a good candidate for breast preservation. Perhaps the tumor is too big, and if she had a lumpectomy, it would lead to a bad cosmetic result. Or maybe the tumor involves the skin or the nipple, and you want to preserve the skin and nipple. So under that circumstance, and you can begin chemotherapy preoperatively, shrink down the cancer, clear any cancer that involves the skin or nipple to allow an eventual lumpectomy and good cosmetic result.
Okay, sounds good. I've always wondered that. What are some of the new treatments, doctor, for breast cancer?
There's a lot of new treatments being investigated in both the initial treatment setting as well as in women who have recurrent diseases. In the front line, more and more of the new drugs are so-called targeted drugs. So they're specific for certain genetic aberrations in the cancer cell.
Is tomotherapy also relatively new on the scene?
Tomotherapy is new, and of course that's a form of radiation therapy. And the advantage of tomotherapy is that it allows the radiation doctors to deliver a beam of radiation to a very, very targeted area. And by doing that, there's less side effects to surrounding tissues.
Fantastic day we're living in, correct?
It is. It's in a huge state of evolution and transition.
And I wanted to ask you personally, since we only have a couple minutes left, what are you working on personally right now?
Well,
in your studies.
In my studies.
Yes.
We still don't have a cell biology laboratory, and still are looking at vaccines.
Sounds good. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Louis Vandermolen. We've been talking today about breast cancer. Coming up, we're going to discuss some of the latest options for diagnosis and treatment of lung cancer, which is also a specialty of Dr. Vandermolen. Remember to share this excellent information with your friends, spouses, and your family by downloading a podcast of this show or any other. It is incredibly important. 24 hours a day, on demand, which means anytime you have a little bit of time on your hands to listen. Dr. Vandermolen is here to answer your questions, so take advantage of his expertise. I'm Deborah Howell for Hoag Health Radio. Stay tuned for much, much more ahead.